Hi, guys. If you have found yourself listening to this bonus episode, it's probably because you listened to episode number 29 and then wanted to hear the rest of my conversation with Brandy. But if you haven't listened to episode 29 yet, it probably will be better for you to listen to that one first and then this one. All right, I'm just going to get right into it. Enjoy this bonus episode of the remainder of my conversation with the amazing Brandy Ferner of Adult Conversations Podcast. I've been retired 16 years, so I'm really just I'm a stay-at-home mom, but I have this history of being a family physician. And so I've delivered maybe 200 or 300 babies in training. And so I'm so fascinated by birth. And I always said if I had been a nurse, I would have been an L&D nurse. I love, love, love birth. And
yes,
I would have been an OBGYN in a heartbeat if I didn't need to have any other life beyond my career. So I love what you do. It's so awesome. But I want to know, what is the process of becoming a doula and a childbirth educator and a birth trauma mentor?
Well, it can look a bunch of different ways for people, but there are certifying bodies that you can go to. So these are organizations, and you can get a certification through them. So they will guide you through things you need to know to help support people in labor and anatomy stuff and comfort measures and all of these things. So it just depends. You can pick which different one you want to go with. And so for me, I chose an organization called Birthing From Within, and I know it sounds like kind of woo-woo, but it's not, which is wonderful. So the Birthing From Within background that I got, that I certified through, is their belief is there's not one right way to give birth. So sometimes doulas get certified through organizations that are really natural-minded.
Oh my gosh, I want to just yell up an amen, amen! I didn't even know how I was going to do it till I was in it. Okay, please, please proceed.
Yeah. So we try to prepare people and also be their labor support in a way that isn't like, here's the right way to do it, here's the most natural way, but in a way that helps them to know what to do when they don't know what to do. Because we know that pregnancy and birth and parenting throw surprises at you that you can't plan for. So we would prepare people for the unknown and help them unpack their agreements about birth so that they could actually make choices and have freedom. What you don't realize until you kind of learn about this stuff is that women going into labor have a whole suitcase of agreements about what they think is right or wrong or what a good mother does. And a lot of this is based on things that aren't their own agreements. These are things they've been passed down, friends have said, family, of course, does a heavy dose of brainwashing. So you have these people arriving in labor with this whole suitcase that's not their stuff. That's what I think Birthing From Within was really great about, is we would help them unpack those things and figure out what's motivating you to have a hospital birth or to have a home birth. What's motivating you to avoid reading the chapter about cesarean birth? And so we need to look at those things, and we need to somehow get them to a place where if a cesarean birth became necessary, if that's what it took to save you and your baby, how could you get through that without beating yourself up? And how would you take the next best thing? How would you make that next best choice for yourself?
Oh my gosh, so good.
Yeah, I'm in love with it.
Are you in the delivery room usually?
Yeah, I haven't been doing the work for about a year and a half, but yes. So as a doula, yes, I was in the delivery room. I've even scrubbed in on a cesarean, one other than mine. And so yeah, we're there to help the client advocate for themselves.
I love it. So you're not the doctor in the room. You're not the patient in the room. You're not the nurse in the room. You're not the loved one in the room. You are a somewhat objective and educated support system. That is, it just gives me goosebumps when I say that.
I know.
The delivery room is a really crazy place. It's a crazy place. I delivered, I don't know, I kept track. I was very proud of the number. I can't believe I don't remember it. It was either 217 or 317 babies or something. Loved it, loved it, loved it. With my own hands, you know, as the doctor in the room.
And
so awesome. And so I had a really specific way that I knew I was going to behave in the delivery room and the things that I wanted to happen. But I was flexible because I knew so many things were unknowns and everybody's so different. For instance, I went to labor and delivery after I'd had a couple of hours of contractions. They weren't that painful or anything, but they were pretty regular. And I was like, hi, I'm just here to make sure my baby doesn't fall out on the front yard because I know that can happen.
Yes, right?
The lady's like, no, you are 1 centimeter. Go home and come back when you think you're going to die. And I'm like, okay, thanks, bye.
Okay. But you're like, but I've seen it, just so you know, I've seen it happen. Like,
I've known ladies who had a baby and didn't know they were pregnant. I've had patients where the baby falls out in the car and they don't even know they're in labor. It's So these things, anyway, it's like we know too much, but also.
Yes.
Yeah, so when you're in that educated position, it's amazing to be able to come alongside. I've been in the delivery room with a few girlfriends and it's just so, such an amazing experience. It's very gratifying.
Oh, yeah.
But then I've also been in rooms where patient has no one and they are so unprepared for the situation. And oof.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just so the listeners are, I just know you're on the edge of your seat wondering how I did behave since I figured I was going to be so reserved and just like, oh, this is so hard. No, I thought I was going to be quiet. But as soon as they turned off my epidural so that I could feel everything to push, I reminded my doctor that it hurt maybe 6,482 times. I was like, excuse me, this hurts. Like, there's something, like, turn my epidural back on. What is the matter with you? And he's like,
yes.
So I'm like, it hurts. And he's like, it's okay if it hurts.
Oh, even just that, like, our fear of pain in this society is mind-blowing. And so even just that, even telling people the pain you're experiencing is pain with a purpose. So that's different than if you cut your arm off. I mean, it's different in many ways. Maybe not the best analogy.
That's right. We'll go with it.
Yeah, but we'll go with it. That's a different sort of pain, but pain with purpose, I think some people can wrap their heads around more easily, you know. So even validating that for people, there's so many pieces of this. We don't live in a society that builds a pain coping mindset. We build in one that's an avoidance mindset. Mm-hmm. So that's how most people are coming to labor. And then the people who are not, like, for example, I had a home birth with my son.
Wow.
I had a cesarean with my daughter. So I know both ends of the spectrum, which I'm really grateful for. But
wait, was the home birth first?
Yes.
I can't imagine they would have allowed a home birth after a C-section. Okay.
These days, you know, I'm not totally well read on all the rules, but
the guidelines really change for VBAC.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
But so you just have different groups of people. So here's where I think the training that I received was so beneficial is when you have somebody who comes to you for childbirth education or you're their doula and they are petrified of everything and they want every intervention under the sun and they don't want to feel anything. Now, I know with that person, it's going to serve her the most if I can help pull her or him, you know, if it's a dad that mm-hmm. feels this way too, pull them somewhere towards the middle.
Yep.
Because then if you have somebody who's so avoidant, if they go into labor quickly and they don't get all the interventions they want, they're not going to know how to deal with it. But yeah. Then on the other end of the spectrum, if I get somebody who's got a beautiful home birth plan, who thinks about this whole thing so magically, and if you just manifest and I did yoga and I ate organic, so I know I got to pull them to the middle because what if her baby is breech?
Yep.
And so she, you know, and so that's the thing is the training that I received. I love it so much because you're not just talking about how, it's not about an outcome. Mm-hmm. It's about how you help people to be their most, how would I say it? I don't want to say least extreme, but we help get them into this place where they're like a hunter and they're an advocate for themselves and they have freedom because they don't have a bunch of judgments. We try to help get rid of those judgments mm-hmm. because if you're in the moment and you need to make a choice either way, whether that's more natural than you wanted or less natural, you got to let go of some of that judgment in order to be able to actually make the choice that is best for you and your baby.
Yes. And when people self-educate, they tend to polarize. And that is just yes. a fact. And so when you can come along somebody with information all along the spectrum and say, but have you considered this? But have yes. you considered this? And they go, oh my gosh, I haven't even read anything about that because I'm over here with the all natural stuff. And so good. So good. So excited.
Yeah.
I'm just so excited that that role exists. And I don't know a lot about it, honestly, because I was just Western medicine all the way and totally, you know, when you're in a residency program, those yeah. patients don't, you know, there's nothing special and extra that they're getting. They're just there and, you know, doing what the program's putting them through. So,
right.
Yeah. So it's very cool. Very cool. My husband has two older sisters, and so they both had kids before we did. And I love them both. They're wonderful. They're two of my best friends. But what one of them, Kim, said to me, sometimes don't you want to just be home with your baby? And isn't it just this wonderful thing? And I was thinking, no, I don't know how to be home all day. I'm a yeah. mover and a shaker. I was yes. a doctor before I did this. And
yeah.
I was like heels to the pavement, fixing problems and putting out fires and using my brain. And no. So I would slap Delaney in a car seat and we would go on all our little drive around errands and she would be back there like contained in her little bubble of her car seat. And then we'd pull into Babies R Us and I'd go into the back and I'd nurse her and then we'd get back in the car. Because it was like, I did not know how to just be home all day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just one small example. And I always envied Kim because she just had this peace about her. But I think it was just because she's a totally different person than I am. And I always thought, why can't I just be peaceful like Kim is, you know?
That's right. And so when we arrive to motherhood, how our journey goes depends on who we were when we arrived there. Yeah. So somebody who is more chill and is slower paced maybe takes it on and is like, oh, this is amazing. And then people who are go-getters and who are motivated, who have interests outside of just being a parent, all of a sudden they're like, I don't even know how to exist here. But then you add on all the agreements they have about what a good mom does.
I'm actually an introvert, which I know is shocking because I don't act like one really, but I am. And so when I was a kid, I was super shy. I was really reserved. And my daughter and I worked really hard and my mom worked really hard helping me, you know, to figure out how to navigate the world with that nature, because it's not like my nature changed. But anyway, so my younger daughter's like me that way. And she said to me a few months ago, Mom, it seems like you always know the right thing to say. And I was like, oh, honey, thank you so much. And furthermore, let me tell you that at 14 years old, you are leagues beyond where I was as a 14-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to be just fine.
Yeah, but you know why they're leagues ahead of us is because we're their parents.
Yay, us.
You know, like we got to take some credit for that, because my son will tell me things and we'll have conversations and I'm in awe of, you know, I was like listening to Janet Jackson on a boombox and making up dances. And, you know, that was my intellectual capacity. But, you know, he's like having these conversations about the criminal justice system and all these things. And it's like, wow, how did you turn out like that? And then I look at my husband and myself and I'm like, oh, yeah, we probably had something to do with that.
Like, wait a minute. Let's have a back patting moment. Everyone pat your back.
Yeah.
I mean,
everyone.
Okay, they have our genetics. And, you know, we are bringing them up, but it's just such a fascinating combination of their environment, our genetics, and then like magic.
It's right.
Yeah.
Because it can go any way and it can just be, you know, you can do all the same things and have it totally turn differently. So it's a luck thing, I think also, but I think a lot of us, and this is part of the overwhelming nature of motherhood these days and fatherhood, is we're trying to correct things that weren't done the way that we wanted them when we were kids. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of us, I think, swing a really far the other way, maybe sometimes too far.
Yeah.
But I think this is part of it, is I think our generation grew up where you didn't really have a lot of really open, thoughtful discussion with your parents.
Yep.
And so I know my husband and I are both really interested in things and we're chatty and writers. And so it's interesting seeing my son grow up and my daughter too in a family where we at the dinner table were talking about prisoners' rights and we watched the Democratic debates the other night and you know, we're talking about all of this stuff that as a kid we just never did in my house. So I think a lot of us are trying to, you know, do better. And then I think the hilarious thing is like we overdo it and so we're all overwhelmed because we're trying to do better. Like maybe our parents were onto something, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, like God, just go sit and have a drink with your husband in the other room. Who cares what they're doing right now?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I want to be a parent in the 70s. Oh, that sounds amazing.
It sounds so great. Nobody knew smoking was bad for you and you could just neglect your children. Now, I'm not saying I was neglected, but you know, in general, it's so different.
Yes.
But I feel like it's a really interesting bridge to gap between you know, we don't want to be completely detached and not treat them like they are evolving and intellectual and intelligent human beings. But at the same time, we don't want to, at least I don't want my kids to think, oh, my mom's just my friend and I can tell her anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I want them to think they can tell me anything, but I don't want them to see me as a peer because.
Right. It's a fine line.
It's what I say goes, you know? And so.
Yes.
I'm always feel like I'm walking on that tightrope.
Yeah. I hear you. It's such a fine line.
Yeah. Okay, tell me about your Target card situation.
Oh, man. This is just, I just feel real guilty for it. But so I finally, after 20 years of saying no every time they ask me if I want to open up a Target card, I finally
caved.
Yeah, I was like, I could benefit from this 5% back. So anyway, the first card that they sent me, there was a chip error. And half of the time I try to use it, it would have this like card issuer error, and then they'd have to switch me over to another register, and then it wouldn't work still, even though my account was fine. And then they'd have to manually give me the 5% off. And it was this whole annoying thing, especially if you have kids with you or, you know, people behind you in line. that was super annoying. So, and of course their fix for it was, well, you have to call customer service. I'm like, but you guys messed up the card, but now it's my problem. I'm literally never going to call customer service. This is one of those things that's the impossible task.
Totally.
You know, it's the thing that's so easy and yet I cannot bring myself to do it for months on end. So anyway, one day I finally got the guts to call. And so then they sent me a new card. Well, when you first get a Target card, the limit is pretty low on it. I think it's like $200.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. $200. But they were just trying me out. Yeah. I knew that they were like, we don't know about you yet. And I, you know, I should have like sent them pictures of me in a red top and khakis just so that they knew like my devotion. But no, they were going to haze me. And so this is how it happened is, so I only had like $200 of credit. And so then after I got the new card, this card issuer error thing would keep happening over and over. And it was because I had gone over the $200 mark. But I didn't know that at the time. So I would get all like, oh my gosh, okay. And then I would say to them, you know, every time I do this, it's the card doesn't work. And I've already got one replacement. And does this happen all the time? And I would get kind of exasperated.
You're all huffy and indignant.
Yeah. I mean, I always try to be kind to people in those positions because I'm sure they see so many jerks. So I would never blame it on the person, but I would just, you know, I would always be like, do you guys have a better system or what, you know, your thing must be broken or I don't know, what can I do in the future so this doesn't happen? But I'm also never going to call the customer service again because I barely did it the first time. And so anyway, I've been going through this thing, blaming them. And then I looked on my thing and I was like, oh, well, this was like after months. I was like, oh, it's just that my limit is not enough. So I like paid it off and then went in and it was fine. And I'm like, I don't know who to apologize to. So I've been having them every time, even though I was over my limit, I've been having them like give me the 5% off manually and then use a different credit card. So it's like, oh man. And they were always so nice. Maybe it's because I was nice to them, but nobody was ever like, listen, you're going over your limit, which they would have had every right to do. So I feel guilt, like they don't know it, but I just feel like I need to have some kind of reparations with Target, and I don't know what that is. So I'm going to be thinking on that.
I think that you've already repaired your relationship with Target because you obviously buy a lot of stuff at Target.
Well, now that they've vetted me, and I mean, they know that I'm a shopper there and that I pay my thing off, then they upped my limit. So now I should never have to berate an employee ever again. I never berated anybody.
No, you didn't.
You know.
Tell you that the amount of money that I spent at Target when my kids were babies is the reason why I do the bills now and my husband doesn't.
Oh,
literally.
Right. Yeah.
Because, and it wasn't 200. Really, it was like, he'd go, babe, what in the world are you buying at Target for $100? And I'm like,
you're like, you tell me.
Uh-huh. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm keeping your children alive on a daily basis. I'm making sure we don't run out of toilet paper. Duh. Like, why are you even asking me that? So I'm like, you know what? I don't need this kind of grilling. Let me just do the bills. I think the spender should be the one that does the bills. Anyway, we've been married a long time now, and I've been doing the bills this whole time, and it's so much better. But
yes, I've always done our bills, and it's great because, well, it's funny because it can backfire on you because, you know, sometimes I will be really frugal. I'm like a bargain hunter by nature, mm-hmm. sort of. And so I'll be really frugal to, you know, save 10 or $5 or whatever on something. And then my husband will go buy something. I'm like, did you find that on sale? And he's like, no, I just got it. I'm like, did you even cross check anywhere else? And so because he doesn't see the bills and have to deal with it, you know, those things are not as top of mind. So it's a good thing. And it's also hard. I feel like ideally both people would see the bills.
Yeah, but true. Because I definitely nickel and dime us. And my husband definitely makes like gigantic purchases on random basis that I'm like, what? You know?
Yes, so exactly. And it's painful when you're like, I drove 20 miles to save $15 on that. And you just like spend so much more than that. Like, my time is valuable.
What do you think I'm doing here? Yeah.
Yes. I know. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Five or six years ago, I had a stomach virus, and I was totally fine as long as I was sitting perfectly still. I didn't throw up or have diarrhea or anything, but I was completely miserable every Ooh. Time I moved.
Oh,
it was awful. It lasted for about 3 days. And I, like I told you, I'm a doer. I'm a I'm a mover and a shaker and a go-getter. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had certain ideas about the kind of house I wanted to run and the things that I wanted to provide for my children and my husband. And I just was balls to the wall is came into my head. But
balls.
I'm like, yeah,
nice. There's balls. Balls is a again. Measuring stick. Yeah.
So, or when I was in CrossFit, I used to say ovaries to the wall because, you know, our balls are our ovaries. But
nice.
Anyway,
yes.
So I couldn't do anything. And my husband's working full time and my kids are in school. So it's not like they're at home and needing me and pulling on me or whatever. But I just couldn't do a single thing. I didn't do any meal planning. I didn't do any laundry. I didn't do anything for anyone. I didn't take anyone anywhere, nothing. And my husband was working, but he, you know, he filled in the gaps. Not only did he do everything he could, but for the things that he couldn't do, he called my mom. He got it all scheduled. He did everything. Number one, I'm sorry, everybody else. I have the best husband ever. I mean, I just love him so much. He's so wonderful to me. But that wasn't the major realization. The major realization was that after those 3 days, they still loved me and I was still mom and I was still the wife and I had just as much value as I did before those 3 days. And it really changed my perspective on what my role in this family is. Mm. And it was like, I'm not only loved and good and valued because of all the stuff I make happen and all of the things that I do.
Yes.
I can do none of that and I'm still loved and valued and you know, I don't know.
Yes. Oh, gosh. We need to know that we're more than what we can do. But what's interesting, too, about it is you probably got that help for those 3 days. And then when it went away, that help, I'm just going to assume here, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, that help he was giving you is probably more of a 50-50 equal kind of help, closer to 50-50 than maybe what you were used to. In the book, mm-hmm. Darcy has a quote, inequality looks like equality when you're not used to equality.
Mm-hmm. It's all relative.
Yeah, it's all relative. So all of a sudden somebody steps up and you think, oh my gosh, they're doing so much more.
He's doing everything.
But it's like, no, he was probably just doing an equal amount, but we're so skewed because of the way that we look at things. And I don't know. I mean, maybe he was just like doing everything. So I'm not meaning to say he wasn't doing a lot.
It was an extreme situation and he was literally doing everything or enlisting other people to do what he couldn't do.
Yes.
But it really taught me how to ask him for help. And it really taught me that he not only can he do these things, he doesn't even mind doing them. And furthermore, he's good at them. He can do the dishes.
Totally.
He can do everything but laundry because I don't want him ruining my clothes.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. Uh-huh. Yes, I think that that's such a great point.
It's like I wasn't giving him enough credit. I was putting my own self up on this.
Like only you could do it.
Yeah, I was kind of on a pedestal and kind of in a pit all at the same time in this weirdness, you know?
Yes.
Because I was like, I am the slave. I am the only slave. I am the only person who can possibly do all of these things. And it's like, BS. No, you aren't, you know?
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you like knocked yourself right off of that.
I sure did.
Or your stomach virus
I
did.
I climbed up out of that pit all at once. Woohoo. Yeah. Awesome.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us for this bonus episode of the Fancy Free Podcast. I really appreciate you listening to it, and I hope you got a couple more pearls or nuggets to take away with you. Remember to come back on Wednesday for our extra special episode with Sydney Beer. And as always, have a wonderful week. And remember, no one is as fancy as they look.